Right. So thank you very much, Jason, that you, you know, forced me to start this discussion today. to start the discussion, because usually when Russians say informal discussion, that means that the speaker means, you know, well, the first 5 minutes, he has a voice, you know, and then correlation is gone. Okay.
Which system you prefer?
I like European one. Civilized is good. Okay, so I'm going to talk about three boson problem near a narrow Feshbach resonance. And actually, the words narrow resonance is the most important here. And three boson problem I will use only as an example, illustrative example of a system where this narrow resonance can work. So this work has been done at ITEMP, which is Institute of Theoretical Atomic, Molecular, and Optical Physics, and Center for Ultracold Atoms, Harvard MIT Center for Ultracold Atoms. Discussions with Vasily Harchenko and Mikhail Lukin are acknowledged. So first of all, the outline. You know, I will spend one slide on the very short introduction, and I will explain what is strong interaction in ultracold gases, what are the lengths and energy scales. And then, so that everybody understands what we are talking about. And then I will talk about narrow Feshbach resonances, and I will ask and answer the question, is it possible that a short-range potential looks like a long-range one? And then, you know, if I have time, you know, I will talk about three boson physics. So usually the largest length scale in the gas is the mean antiparticle separation, or in the quantum degenerate gas, it's 1/k, where k is the average momentum. And this is the largest scale that we have in the gas, except of course the size of the cloud, but in this is too large for us. So the smallest length scale is the range of the interatomic potential, which is given by van der Waals, this tail of the van der Waals potential, and it gives us very nice parameter, k times Re, much smaller than 1. So the Re basically is much smaller than the de Broglie wavelengths of particles. This also tells us that we can neglect all higher order and higher angular momentum contributions, P wave, D wave, etc. And S wave scattering is the dominant one and it's the most important. This small parameter doesn't mean that we have weakly interacting gas, because what we can do, we can tune the scattering length to be large and to have any sign, and nowadays it's possible to tune it using the Feshbach resonance to...
Why is it cut off on the other side? There's no way to fix it, never mind.
But, you know... Yeah, so... Okay. Sorry. I checked with the last time it worked. Actually, you know, at ITEMP we have the same projector, so it worked there. So.
Okay.
Well, there is not much information there. Okay, so in this case, so it's I schematically showed it A, but it can be whatever. It can be zero. It can be plus infinity, minus infinity. It can be anything. So according to the usual distinction, we distinct like two cases. When A times K is much smaller than 1, then we say we have weakly interacting gas. And when A is of the order of 1/k or larger, then we have strongly interacting gas. Okay, so usually this range Re is of the order of 100 of Bohr radii. So 60 is for light, for lithium, and 200 for cesium. Scattering length can be whatever. It can be like 10 to the 3 Bohr radii, for example. And the average mean antiparticle separation is 10 to the 4 Bohr radii. In energy units, this gives us the energy parameter, which is the largest energy scale here, inversely proportional to the effective range squared. And physically, it gives the level spacing inside this van der Waals potential. So it is something like 40 microkelvin for cesium and 10 millikelvin for lithium. Scattering lengths gives us the parameter which, for positive and large scattering lengths, we have binding energy, which is inversely proportional to A squared. Typically, it's like for this value of A is 10 microkelvin. And the density gives us degeneracy temperature, which is n to the power of 2/3, typically 1 microkelvin. So it looks like scattering lengths gives us all important information about the ultracold gas. But I want to argue that this is true only for wide resonances. And about narrow resonances, I will talk about now. Okay. So there are two types of resonance scattering. The first one is potential resonance. This is what Mohit talked about yesterday. If we have a potential which looks like this, and there is a weakly bound state here, or virtually bound state, which is the state which can be made weakly bound by infinitesimal change of the potential here, then we have very large scattering lengths, and the scattering amplitude is given by this expression, where I use H and M equals 1. This expression is valid for ultracold scattering. When E, square root of E times RE, is much smaller than 1. RE here is the range of the potential. So when energy goes to zero, it gives us minus A, where A is the scattering length. So the second type of the resonance scattering is the resonance at a quasi-stationary level. Or also called quasi-discrete level. If we have a molecular potential like this, and if we have a bound state here, which is stationary level, and then if we allow tunneling to the continuum, then this level becomes quasi-stationary. It has a finite time disintegration rate, which gives the width of this level and finite lifetime. So the resonance at a quasi-stationary level occurs when we have particles colliding at the collision energy, which is approximately equal to the energy of this resonance of this level, which I will call E Ries. So the scattering lengths varies dispersively as 1 over E minus E Ries. This is just usual type of Braid-Wigner scattering.
Sorry?
A does not depend on E, because
just
something given by the range of the potential, right?
Yes, exactly. That's what, you know.
But it here depends on the energy of this kind of
I will just talk about this. This is a jargon expression, of course. A should not depend on energy. A is, by definition, is the limit of the scattering amplitude at E goes to zero. But it will be, you know, it's sometimes convenient to call it energy-dependent scattering mass, and I will explain just in a minute. Okay. So, but for us, for ultra cold gases community, it would be nice if this resonant energy can be tuned to zero, to the threshold of the free particle threshold. To do it, one uses Feshbach resonances, and it was pointed out by, I think, Stwolle in 1976, and then for ultra cold gases by Ferhar and co-workers in 1993, that one can use Feshbach or also called Fano resonances. The physical picture is more or less like this, but the only difference is that now the problem is two channel. Here we have one channel which is called open, in which particles approach each other, and there is also a channel which is called closed. The threshold for this channel is higher than the energy of particles. That's why it's called closed. So if here in the closed channel we have a molecular level, and if it is above the threshold for the open channel, and there is a coupling between these two channels, then this level is also quasi-stationary. So basically the same situation as here, and the same expression for the scattering lengths. Yes, for example, this can be singlet, well, electronically singlet, and this can be triplet potential, molecular potentials. So,
do you need, are those things implicitly some sort of adiabatic potential?
Yes.
And
yeah, this is simplest picture, like two channels. In fact, it's, for example, in rubidium 85. There are like four or five channels which have resonances at more or less the same point.
And the adiabaticity is always okay.
Yes. Well, not always, but I mean for. Well, it gives some. I mean, this law is the same.
So it doesn't really matter if these curves don't really quite exist somewhere in the middle. One can still use the asymptotic part and the central part somehow.
Yes. Yes. So basically
solve the whole problem. Right?
Yes. Yes.
I mean, it's what people do in practice, I guess.
Yeah.
Usually, with all the many channels,
yeah,
to just put into.
Yes, but for us it will be only important that this resonant, that this dispersive law. And I'm not going to this dispersive law. For me it will be
right
in this talk.
And I mean all we need really is what the K matrix having some energy dependence,
yeah,
like this, and it doesn't matter really where it comes from, does it?
Yeah. But I want to explain, I mean, the cases when. So this thing is important for ultra cold gases because this can be tuned by magnetic field due to different magnetic moments of closed and open channel.
What's my question? I'm not sure I understand.
Well, it was two questions, I guess, because it has ramifications, I think, in what you're about to say now. It's whether you really need to think of these curves as being continuous. Adiabatic potential,
no,
that the atoms move along, or the
no,
coolant moves
no,
along.
No, but this is
and the answer to that is apparently no, you don't.
But this is a model picture.
Yeah.
You have two curves and you have coupled, you know, two Schrödinger equations with coupling. And this is, you know.
Okay, because the other question I'd like to ask once you introduce a magnetic field is whether you can get level crossing occurring then, because you have two parameters R and magnetic field, and generically you expect metal crossing will shoot two parameters rather than just one.
Well, magnetic field would be his way of tuning.
There's a different things. It means he's cursed cross, and then there's issues about if they are adiabatic, whether you follow which curve you follow, that sort of thing.
Well, for let's say I think this question is very interesting, but I'm not going. I mean, in my case, it will not be important. I mean, what will be important is that is this dispersive law. The other kind of opportunity to use this kind of technique.
I guess it's going back to Miguel's question, but the scattering names is defined to be at zero energy. I mean, you talk about the phase shifts, and there is indeed a difference in the behavior of the phase shifts, whether you have a barrier or no barrier. In one case, you have a resonance, i.e. the scattering cross-section has a maximum.
You're talking about the difference between this and this?
No, I'm just talking about I don't understand this formula. Energy dependent.
Can you give me 5 minutes?
Sure.
5 minutes.
Excuse me.
I mean, the second. Okay. So the second opportunity is so-called optical Fischbach resonances, when you have again one channel is like ground electronically ground state, and we can couple it by light to a molecular state in the electronically excited molecular curve. There is it. So this was proposed by Fedichev, Kagan, Shlyapnikov, and Valravin in 1996. And the physics is more or less the same. The only problem is that instead of hyperfine coupling here, you use light, and you can tune this level basically by changing the frequency of the light. However, there is a problem because this quasi-stationary level, you imply that particles spend a lot of time in this quasi-stationary level. And here it's a problem because of the spontaneous emission. So what is probably the better thing to do is to use two-color Raman transition from here to a molecular level below in the ground state potential. So to the best of my knowledge, I don't know whether it was proposed as the method to change scattering lengths. But explicit expressions for the S for the T matrix is given by Born and Julian in 1999 in Physical Review A. So in all this three cases, we have scattering amplitude, which is minus 1 over R star E minus E res plus I square root of E. And this can be found in, for example, in Landau and Lifshitz. This is just Breit-Wigner. General law for Breit-Wigner scattering at low energies.
Could you just tell me one thing, please? The size of the molecules that you have in each of these different cases, it's much smaller than if you are close to resonance than A. There are some different lengths.
Yeah. The size of the molecule is defined by RE, by the range of the potential.
In
basically. Yes, this is the molecule in the closed channel. It's not the same as the molecule in the in the open channel. So. Okay, so
R star
is the parameter of the dimension of length, and it's always positive. And I can rewrite this thing as 1 over minus here, 1 over A plus R star E plus I square root of E. Then the scattering length is given by simply R star minus R star resonant energy. And this can be tuned by magnetic field in the case of magnetically tuned resonance. And R star is given by the width of the resonance. And important thing is that here the width is fixed by the hyperfine interaction. But here, for example, we can not only tune the scattering length, but also this R star by changing the intensity of light. So we have more control here.
So R star, you say you can form from the width of the resonance.
Yes.
Does the actual length scale have any significance in the actual form of the wave function? I mean, is it some feature of the wave function you can discern
R star is inversely proportional to the width of the resonance. But the wave function is difficult, is complicated because it's like two channels and they're coupled. So I don't think you can
in the open channel whether the wave function was altered.
No, but I will elaborate on this R star just in a few minutes.
But so doesn't it also depend on the difference in magnetic moments as well as the width?
Again, you just give me 5 minutes, okay? I will present the formula for this R star. What is important is that this formula is valid when E times R E. Okay, square root of E times RE is much smaller than 1. So, and narrow resonances, what I call narrow resonances is resonance when R star is larger than RE. Okay. So the scattering length, what was written here, remember this 1 over A plus I square root of E. So this case is the same, well, I can define energy-dependent scattering length as 1 over A plus R star E. And then I can plug it into the formula for the potential resonance, for the scattering amplitude and the potential resonance, and get this kind of thing. This is also consistent with the following thing. Suppose that I set the Bethe-Pyrrhus boundary conditions. On the wave function, which looks like minus R psi, So if I set this boundary condition with energy-dependent scattering length defined by this expression, then I get exactly the same. Then I get this scattering amplitude. This is the boundary condition at R equals 0. So, but...
Can you just explain a bit the meaning of this boundary?
Okay, so in this case, the potential, the short-range potential is substituted by boundary condition at 0. For example, you have a potential like this, and you plot here R times psi. So what happens here, we're not interested in. We're interested only in what happens here. And here, it's just linear. and you can remove all this mass that happens here and say that psi is just boundary condition here of this type, And in the case when scatteringness depends on energy, it also depends, this boundary condition depends on the energy of the of particles. Okay, now, to explain the physical meaning of this R star, let us consider the case when A equals infinity, which means that B equals B naught. We sit on top of the resonance. And at zero energy, scattering length is infinite. Now, A is a function of E, looks like 1 over R star E. But we know that the collisions between particles lead to strongly interacting gas when A is a function of E times square root of E is much larger than 1. If I substitute this thing here, then I see that the condition for strongly interacting gas is R star square root of E much smaller than 1, which is true. When the detuning is smaller than 1 over R star square, we have scattering length is larger than the de Broglie wavelengths. That means that we have strongly interacting case. And weakly interacting is the opposite. R star square root of E much larger than 1. So for large energies, basically particles are off-resonant and they don't feel the potential. But we can say that they don't feel the potential at all. Okay, so illustration. Can I remove this?
So, can I just ask for clarification? This symbol down, that square root of E times R, what?
Effective. In your book, it's C6 to the power of 1/4. So it's RE to the power 4 divided by R6. So this is the term, this van der Waals term in the Schrödinger equation.
I guess what is... Oh, I see. So your strongly interacting, weakly interacting classification is after you seek yourself at resonance and then you further classify the strongly interacting, weakly interacting.
It's also the case when I'm a little bit out of resonance.
But if I'm a little bit out of resonance, then the scattering length is not infinite. But then you would be claiming that you would always have the strongly interacting. It's for sufficient low energy. You always satisfy the strong interacting criterion according to that classification.
Okay, by definition, if I write scattering amplitude like this, 1 over A plus R star E plus I square root of E, the terms that stands here, actually it should look like this, minus R naught divided by 2. Then it's called effective range. This, and we see that our effective range here is minus 2 times R star. It doesn't depend on A, actually. It is defined by this formula. So what I can say that my R star is basically the effective range. And the interesting situation which I'm interested in is when this guy is larger than the actual range of the potential.
So if the, basically, if somehow the real part of the real part of the scattering amplitude somehow is much less than the imaginary part, then you call it the strong interacting regime.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. Yes, and this will be the same, more or less the same equation. So the illustration is, so resonant energy is zero, so if particles collide at small energy, with momentum smaller than 1 over r star, then the interaction is resonant. Here we are off-resonant, and it resembles very much the case of Ramsauer effect for electron scattering by atoms, because there is also a momentum dependence of the scattering amplitude, but the characteristic momentum there is 1 over effective range, and here my characteristic momentum of 1 over r star. And the important thing is when r star is much larger than re. So this is the interesting case. So we see that Feshbach resonance, narrow Feshbach resonances, have some properties of interaction with a finite range, r star. So what is r star? What is the value of r star? So this is the explicit formula. R star is inversely proportional to the mass, to the background scattering length, to the difference in the magnetic moments of open and closed channel, and to the magnetic width of the resonance. This is in units, which is understandable for experimentalists who work in this. So here, I took three resonances in lithium 6, sodium, and rubidium. So where you should look is that read
this particular expression for Feshbach resonance. Then, because for other resonances, I don't have this sort of derivative.
Oh, for other resonances, yeah. Yes. For
so basically, that is
this is the energetic width of the resonance. So you plug here energetic width of the resonance and background scattering lengths, and you will see this thing. Actually, this energetic width is defined in the following way. It's the detuning at which the scattering length becomes comparable with the background scattering length, which is usually of the order of the range of the potential, Re. So it's not the same as we want to use. This is wider, kind of. This width is wider. So important here is that this red numbers, effective range, actual range of the potential, and R star calculated for the Feshbach resonances, 543 Gauss for lithium 6. Which has very narrow widths, and also the mass of lithium is very small. That's why we have this, 2 microns. R star equals 2 microns. And this is fermion. So I'm not going to talk about this. I'm not going to talk about lithium 6 today. But I mean, this is quite amazing, because 2 microns is even larger than the wavelengths of light. So it looks like, there is very strong momentum dependence of the scattering. And this famous 907 Gauss resonance in sodium, if you remember this Nature paper in 1998 by Wolfgang, where he modified interaction in a BEC of sodium. Here, actually, the range is 45 angstrom, and R star is 260, which is much larger than R star, much larger than the range. And the recent experiment in rubidium by Gerhard Rempe, and I heard also that Chris Foote is doing something on the Feshbach resonances in rubidium 87. The widest resonance at 1007 Gauss, the width is 170 milligauss, and we have 320 angstrom R star, which is also larger than the 85. Actually, there are more narrow resonances in alkalis, but the problem is that this widths are become too narrow, so you don't have control. I mean, the stability of the magnetic field nowadays it's like 100 milligauss only, 30 milligauss in the case of Gerhard Rempe, and 100 milligauss in Ketterle's experiment. But he said that he can improve this thing. And Hewlett has one exactly this one, 100 milligauss also. So far narrow resonances are detected only by sweeping through and looking how much atoms are left, basically. And they can see that here is the resonance, because when we sweep through, we lose atoms. So it would be interesting to study the long range, this kind of long range forces in the context of many body physics. But what I'm going to do today is I'm going to talk about three boson problem. And if you have questions about this two body physics, just ask, because what is going to be, you know, in 5 minutes it will be three body stuff.
So what is the punchline that they occur often, and what happened afterwards? I mean, are there, you think they have important effects in, for example, the current fermion experiments and or some boson experiments?
I don't think that. I mean, the lithium experiment where they use this wide resonance, this R star is smaller than Re. So if you calculate R star, then you will see that it's small. So it's wide resonance. Basically, scattering length is constant, doesn't depend on energy. In potassium, it's also 7 gauss. It's 7 gauss, and potassium is pretty heavy. So I think that R star, and you know, there is no energy. Actually, this 260, you know, if you convert it in energy units, you still find that this energy is much larger than the temperature. Mm-hmm. So you have to search for, you know, energetic observables. How can you get this kind of energy from ultra cold gas with, you know, with 1 microkelvin temperature? And it turns out that for bosons it's possible. So I continue.
When you think about the rubidium 87 ones that have been found, or when you say for bosons it's possible,
yes, I'm going to show that actually that this thing has implications for rubidium 87 and for sodium. And actually this experiment that's still not explained about three body recombination. So I managed to get very nice agreement with experimental data. Okay.
So some of the message is that the light mass is important here.
Yes, if I find, I would be happy to find like 10 gauss wide Feshbach resonance in lithium 7. So then 10 gauss wide means that high accuracy of the magnetic field. So you can go wherever you want on this dispersive line. And mass, you know, for example, mass of lithium. And if you compare mass of cesium is not on this graph at all, because but there are very narrow resonances. For example, in Rudy Green's experiment of this atom molecule conversion, R star is also very large, but he cannot sit on top of the resonance because of the this resonance is 0.1 milligauss also, 0.1 gauss wide. Okay.
Just try to clarify. I mean, I some better terminology. Usually, what in the Feshbach resonance, I mean the width. It just I just look at the figure of the scattering length. But then, but your way of classifying it is actually look at the size of the effective range. You know, R star, which is not immediately connected.
Right. That's a good question. Yes. Where is my black screen?
Yes.
Usually what you write it like this, so A is a function of energy equals A background 1 plus delta E divided by E minus E res. Now then you say that E res is D E res over D B, B minus B naught. And then you say that, okay, in my ultra cold gas, this energy can be neglected because the width of the resonance is much larger than this energy, so I neglect this thing. And also, if I'm close to resonance, I neglect this one here because I'm already high on this dispersive curve. And here, what you get is A background delta divided by dE over dB, B minus B naught. And I can write it like this. With minus here. Minus, right? Because resonant energy is negative. Well, okay, so, I mean, there should be some. No, I forgot some minus here. So, and this expression, which was written first, A background equals delta E, sorry, A equals background divided by E minus E res, I can rewrite it in terms of my R star simply by saying that this thing is inversely proportional to R star. And that was the formula that I presented. Okay.
So I can just comment that if you have a low energy model in which you have a molecule coupled to fermions, to atoms, then this collection is just basically the atom molecule coupling squared.
Right. So
this energy.
So effective range, you go here. You go back here. And the second. Yes.
Yeah. So it's the same ground. I was wondering why they're the same. Yeah.
What is important, and you don't ask, is that why this R star is positive. So I spent like a couple of weeks figuring this out.
Oh, we took a long time. It turns out we found answer in random Lifshitz.
Yes, and yes, I found this answer in random Lifshitz, and the idea is that if
ghosts?
No, because the lifetime of this level is positive. It could not be negative.
Yes.
So,
but
the lifetime, the gamma, you know, the rate. R star is okay. I rewrite it like this: 1 over R star, and here it's 1 over R star. So this is the lifetime of the quasi station. So disintegration rate. Because it should be proportional to the density of states. Yes, density of states, and this should be positive. So that's the simple explanation. Okay. How does it work? No. Slowly, adiabatically. Yes, it worked. Okay, so the motivation to study three-body physics is the following. So if you remember this boom of atom molecule conversion experiments last year, then in Fermi gases, atoms were converted to molecules in 1, 2, 3, 4, in five laboratories. And also Bose gases were converted into molecules. At MIT, it was sodium, at Max Planck Institute in the group of Gerhard Rempe, rubidium, and also in Oxford is rubidium, and in Innsbruck is cesium in the group of Rudy Green. So the idea here is that this is the scattering length versus magnetic field, and if we start on the attractive side of the resonance, then we have atomic gas, and we don't have weakly bound states. If we change this, tune the magnetic field adiabatically through the resonance, we form molecules, and conversion efficiency can be from 10 to 90%. So basically, in the end, we have an atom-molecule mixture. So three processes basically are interesting in this regime when the scattering length is large and positive. Atom dimer scattering, because it's an important process that characterizes the atom-molecule mixture. Three-body recombination, or in this case, the inverse process, breakup reaction of atom and in collision between atoms and molecules, and dimer scattering length. But this is already four-body process, and we solve it for fermions. As you can see from this color code, this is remnants from fermions. You know, yellow and green are different hyperfine components of fermions. But what I'm going to do is I want to address this problem and this problem when the color is the same, so for identical bosons. So three boson problem with resonant interaction was considered mainly in the context of nuclear physics by Yefimov and in the context of people were interested in this because they wanted to know the properties of deuterium, the nucleus of deuterium, and neutron-deuteron scattering. So basically the same processes that were on the previous slide here. And probably the most convenient and the most easiest way to explain the physics that this Yefimov physics is to go to hyper spherical coordinate. In this set of coordinates, hyper radius is the average, basically average radius of the basically the radius of the circle that you can imagine over these three particles, and all other coordinates. Basically, if you get rid of center of mass, then you have five more coordinates. These are called hyper angles. And five-dimensional. So you can imagine six-dimensional configuration space, and the sphere in this space will give you constant hyper radius. And if you integrate out the hyperangular part of the wave function, then you end up with a kind of Schrödinger equation for the hyperspherical part of the wave function with the effective this is the effective this is just effective what?
No, just go out of the slider mode.
Good.
Yeah.
Thanks. Okay. Okay, this is the so we get a kind of a Schrödinger equation, the second order differential equation with effective potential, which goes like 1 over rho squared, attractive 1 over rho squared, at distances, at hyper radii, smaller than the scattering length. This is the usual Yefimov physics when scattering length is constant. It does not depend on energy. But I'm going to start with this picture first. Here it's exponentially decaying. So basically, this curve describes atom-molecule collision. Right. Okay. So my animation, you know, with this. No animation anymore. Okay, so if you look at this potential, then you see that it's very strange. Along the hyper radius, particles accelerate here, and the maximum energy, basically, that I can have is achieved when rho is of the order of the range of the potential, when three particles are very close to each other. And if I substitute Re here, then I see that this energy is of the order of h bar squared divided by m Re squared, which is the highest energy scale in our problem. But the collisions is on this energy scale, the collisions are at zero energy. So I start with very cold gas. And by energy conservation, I should have this energy coming from somewhere. It turns out that it comes from pair potential energies. So basically, if I look at these three particles in this configuration, when these two are very close and the third one is pretty far, then I see that hyperradial motion corresponds to the relative motion of this atom with respect to this pair. And this is very energetic when rho is small. That means that the total energy is the sum of this energy and the collision energy of these two atoms. This means that particles collide at energy which is much larger than the temperature in the gas, which is determined by the 1 over Re squared term. And if I include now my energy-dependent scattering length in the problem, then I see that particles actually become off-resonant, which is the necessary condition for the Efimov physics to work, is that the scattering length is larger than rho. And
the third part, to start with, you have the three particles, very low energies, all those are almost...
Yeah, for example, you know, the setup for three-body recombination.
So the other two would therefore have very small have large negative energy.
Right.
So why do you say the high energy collisions? Because they are really forming some.
But they are off resonant. I mean, I don't care whether E is positive or negative. All these formulas here were valid for negative and positive energies. Mm-hmm. So here I say that it's high, but
high
modulus.
It's
modulus.
Zero energy.
Yes. Okay. So there, for example, if I consider A is infinite, and at these distances, I'm off resonant by this amount of energy, by h bar squared divided by m r e squared.
So that means your high energy can be above or below resonance, basically.
Yes.
Yeah, okay,
yes. So I'm off. So in pair collisions, it's off resonant. So the actual calculation shows that at hyper radius smaller than R star, I have change of this regimes, and at smaller distances, instead of 1 over rho squared potential, I get this minus 1 over R star rho Coulomb-like potential. And here I get rid of all these unpleasant things that are connected with 1 over rho squared potential, because this one is very pathological. It has very bad behaving wave functions when rho tends to zero. But in Coulomb potential, everything is fine. It's almost nothing compared to this 1 over rho squared potential. So, yes, and exactly. So instead of going like this, So in 1 over rho squared potential, wave function looks like this. 1 over rho squared, and then rho to the power of I S naught, where S is the famous 1.0064 parameter. Yes. And if I construct real wave function, then it looks like this. 1 over rho squared times sine or cosine of S naught logarithm of rho divided by rho naught, something like this. The problem here is that, so to obtain this result, I just add 1 over squared rho to the minus I S naught. And here it's A star and A, something like this. Because this is also the solution. And this sign, the problem is that there is an uncertainty coming from this rho naught. It can be arbitrary. It could not be defined by simply two-body considerations. And this is a three-body parameter which is needed to describe to calculate three-body observables. In my case, when I have 1 over rho, this wave function tends to finite value. Actually, psi will tend to 1 over rho. Without any uncertainties.
So are there still an infinite number of states?
Yes, because Yefimov states there unbound from below.
Yes.
And from the threshold if A is infinite. So those one which are for infinite scattering lengths, they survive. But those ones who at low energy, localized, yes. they have bound.
Well, I see it's infinite in both directions in some sense. Both at low negative energies and at large negative energies.
Yeah, in 1 over rho square potential, you have here, and then each time you change energy by 22 by e to the power of pi divided by S naught, then you have new Yefimov state, and you have infinite number of them.
But there's an accumulation point. So
yes. Well, if A is infinite. Well, for finite A and for finite range, usually they write that the number of Yefimov states is logarithm A divided by RE. Because at some point you don't have it here, and it saturates to a constant length of A. Okay.
Can I ask another question about translating the stuff from the Feshbach resonance to this context?
Yes.
When you've got three particles involved, do you need to worry about what you mean by the inner state on the closed channel? You know, whether if you have all three particles participating, there's a problem using the inner closed channels.
I benefit a lot from the following consideration, that all important kinematics happen when at least they separated. So basically, when these two are close, are close to each other, I know everything. And when the third is far, is fine. But the situation when all these three are very close, I don't have to worry about because of this. Because I simply, there is nothing. Nothing.
Light.
Yes. Yeah. Like in for fermions. For fermions, it's also like this, more or less like this. Okay. So. Actually rho zero for in my case or in this case in 1 over rho square. In my case, I don't have to calculate it. Actually, I can calculate it. In my case, in my case, I have 1 over rho here. This is R star. This is A. Then 1 over rho squared here and constant here. So this wave function, this sign, so I match this wave function with my wave function here. So this is the way to calculate rho naught if I want to speak in these terms.
Sorry, I thought if the purpose is to cut off the short range part that so that you don't have infinite number of states at short distances, then basically any short range potential can do it. You don't need to have this particular narrow resonance, right?
Yes, but the calculation of this rho naught is very complicated. So it involves this short range three body physics. And for realistic potentials, it's impossible to calculate it. Or maybe for helium, it's possible. But for lithium and for more complicated systems, it's practically impossible.
Impossible. You mean that you don't know the potentials well enough to calculate it, or?
I think that even if you know the potentials. Due to the fact that it has many nodes, and if you put the second channel, for Feshbach resonance, for example, then it becomes completely unmanageable, I think.
Well, I try to understand the relevance of the narrow resonance physics, where you have, which you mentioned the first part. The question is whether the basic F-mod phenomenology is altered. My understanding from what you said is no, it's not. And the only new feature that this gives is that it allows one to have a more accurate calculation of some of this constant. Now, if that were
In the limit when scattering length is larger than R star, it does. But I will talk about this in 1 minute, okay? But here I should start this thing again, because otherwise it will be messy.
Okay, and I'm sorry, the question is really whether there's any qualitative new things or whether.
I will answer this question.
Thank you.
I will answer this question. So this is my result for atom dimer scattering length divided by atomic scattering length, plotted as a function of R star divided by A. A is atomic scattering length. What we see on this picture is that, the case which is considered by Yefimov and the Yefimov case is here to the left. So when R star divided by A is smaller than 1. Each time we cross, each time a new Yefimov state appears, we have a resonance here. And it happens with a periodicity, and logarithmic scale is periodic. So each time we multiply A by 22.7, we get the new Yefimov state. On the other hand, when in the regime when A is smaller than R star, which also exists in our case, because R star is larger than RE, and A can be much larger than the range of the potential, but smaller than R star. Here we have completely different physics. It's not periodic in logarithmic scale and tends to a constant. So this is the first Yefimov state, the second Yefimov state. The beauty is that I can calculate the position of the Yefimov state. Otherwise, here I would have to know this parameter rho naught. But for the rubidium 87 and sodium, I can say here is the position of the Yefimov state. Okay, now we identify two regimes of scattering. I will call it like small detuning, when I detuned small detuning from the resonance, when A is much larger than R star, and intermediate detuning, when A is much is still resonant, but smaller than R star. In the first case, observables are determined mainly by the scattering lengths, and it's the difference from the Yefimov and you know this Eric Braten does is there is no difference. Basically, the same physics. It's 1/ρ² potential and stuff like this. Here, R star plays a role of an effective interaction range. That's what you were talking about. So basically, three-body physics doesn't change. But in this case, actually, this regime has been studied experimentally. Because if you look at the catalyst experiment, then you will see that A is 5 times background scattering length, and it's smaller than R star. And also in the case of Gerhard Rempe, they don't increase scattering length very much. So, and I believe that this is the first theoretical report of this regime. Actually, very strange. It was studied experimentally, but nobody realized that in this case, A, you know, R star is important parameter. Okay, and for three-body recombination, three-body recombination is the following. I consider it at zero energy. So if I, for example, have a BEC at zero temperature, and basically three particles at zero energy coming from infinity, two of them form a bound state with the size A, and the third one is needed to carry away the binding energy. So usually, three-body recombination rate scales with density squared, and the coefficient is called three-body recombination rate constant. Basically, this process is the most important inelastic process in BEC, and this was the motivation to study three-body physics in the context of ultra-cold atoms for several years. It started from 1996 with the work of Jora, and then Brad Esri and Eric Braten contributed. So their contribution actually was the following, that recombination rate constant scales with A to the power of 4 with the coefficient C, dimensionless coefficient. In the case of, you know, the first calculation, 96, they calculated that this universal value 3.9. But then afterwards, more refined technique showed that this coefficient C can be anything between 0 and around 70. And it depends on the three-body parameter. It oscillates as a function of three-body parameter. In my case, I have different situation. So basically, this case is for constant scattering length, and it again it's for small detunings. It's here. The same picture as in the case of Bedak and Braten. So here it's like 68 or 69 also. And periodic as a function of.
But my understanding, that oscillation has never been observed except in computer experiments.
Yes, exactly. What was observed in an experiment at MIT at these points.
Right.
And these points are in the regime of intermediate detunings, when the scattering length is smaller than R star, smaller than R star. Basically, this is my result. And I think it.
So which one is your result?
This is solid line. So this is the result for the narrow resonance. In the case when A, here is the case when A is much larger than R star, and this is where three-body physics doesn't change, but R star can be used as three-body parameter, and this is where it's completely different. And you know.
So when we're in the experimental regime,
okay, you can say the ratio is order of few, and so we'll get a few to the fourth. Is there a simple formula you have for
yes, this is this.
When you get up to this asymptote, is it just the
yes,
a to the fourth instead of an a?
A, right. So, I'm sorry that I didn't put it here. So the usual formula is, what's plotted here is alpha rec divided by a to the power of 4. And in the limit of small detuning, it's just a constant, which is not a constant, but it depends on 68 times sine of logarithm of a divided by rho naught with some coefficients here. Here is S naught, with some phase here. And in my case, is proportional to square root of r star divided by a. Oh, sorry. Okay, so this guy, I know that this guy. So it is r star a and a to the power of 3. Seven half. No.
So you're jumping off the A inside the square root, and probably off the limits of the branch. Length to the fourth.
Yes. That's what I'm sorry, I have to look in my paper. Ah, okay. So. And the coefficient is 192 square root of 3 pi squared. And this is actually I can calculate the second correction because I have small parameter there. Which is r star, a divided by r star. And I can write it like this, times 1 minus 4 pi 3 square root of 3 minus 1. Okay. I calculated only to the second order correction.
See, I haven't gotten it. So are you saying that I thought the old data also fits the old theory, which is of a wide resonance.
No.
Now you say it fits the narrow theory better. Is a dotted line the new theory, the solid line, the old theory?
This one is this expression.
Okay, the dotted line.
I think it's dashed. Yes, okay. Dashed line.
And
scatter points are the experiment of 1999 of MIT.
And the solid line is from the.
Solid line is the yes equations for exact in the limit of.
But the old theorem just oscillates. It keeps going along.
Right? Yes, the old theory will go like this. Yes.
Yeah, but on the other hand, you just told me that experimentally that bounds have never been observed once, secondly.
Oh, this is zero.
Zero, yeah.
No, never.
And now if I just take the data and take these two theories, how can I tell which one is correct?
No, there's one theory here, one asymptotic.
Yes, this is the solution.
Would have gone. Just right. Bouncing along here, right?
Right, exactly.
Oh, I didn't, okay, this is
at the 68, the maximum level.
This expression here.
But what's the different
the squared should be here, actually.
Well, once the asymptote is asymptotic.
Oh, interesting point. Interesting point is this one.
Yes.
You know, so now I can say that, for example, I can say Wolfgang, you know, you have to tune the magnetic field to like 441 milligauss below the resonance, and then you see no three-body recombination to a weakly bound state. Mm-hmm. Yes. No, but unfortunately, his magnetic field stability is only 100 milligauss. So, in order to see this point, you would have to make it like at least 10 milligauss accuracy, at least 10 milligauss accuracy to support the magnetic field.
How would that show up experimentally? Would this be a big dip in the recombination rate? I mean, we can't see the free body recombination rate independently.
He measures lifetime of the sample, and he plots it as a function of magnetic field. So what he sees, usually is that.
Hill's point effect is desirable because then the whole thing becomes very stable.
I see.
Well, except for recombination to deeper bound states.
Yes.
But I believe that their rate is not very, it's not very high. And I can only believe in this.
Can I just ask, does the rate still go to zero somewhere in the full calculation? Is it never?
Oh, you mean the recombination to a weakly bound level goes to zero. At zero energy, at zero collision energy, zero collision energy. But there is also recombination to deeper bound state. But these are believed to be somewhere here, So you will see this deep anyway.
But why would Wolfgang's the stability affect you? Because this periodicity, he can predict 10 minima way out there, so he can jump his, he can tune his field way out there, so. Oh, I see. No.
If he tries to tune it here, then, and if he averages over 15 measurements, then he will be somewhere here. But I mean, it's still possible. The first calculation that I did was wrong, and I get the first minimum somewhere here, and I was very upset because that meant that like. The stability should be like 1 milligauss, and I decided to was very upset. Okay.
Can you apply this method to the region 85?
I can, but there our star is small.
Our star is small
because. The width is something like some 10 gauss, something like this, or maybe more, maybe even more. And rubidium 85 is very massive.
But still, in that experiment too, there is no agreement in serial experiments about three body recombination.
That's right, and this theory doesn't describe negative scattering lengths also, because I consider only recombination to a weakly bound level when A is positive, but in principle this can be included also. But I thought that Eric Braten's result, he can fit the experimental data of rubidium 85.
Well,
right?
But that's not in the regime of overlapping collapse. There's no good
at least This experiment, he said, when he wrote this paper, he said that we got 68, and it's different from the experimental observation by a factor of 6. Well, probably this point, something like this. And we conclude that this is due to recombination to deeper bound states.
For sodium. Deeper.
Yeah, for deeper. And this was unbelievable, actually, because for sure this the amplitude of 3-by recombination to weaker bound state should be larger. And here I think, I mean, now at least I have an explanation why Wolfgang saw this kind of thing. And actually the recombination rate is not large, is not like 1,000 here, because it's divided by a to the 4 and a is decreasing here. So if I plot it as a function, simply alpha recombination as a function of this thing, then it goes like this.
So why, I mean, when you include the energy dependence and you get this change which pushes the curve up compared to what would happen if you didn't,
yeah.
Why is that happening intuitively? Why does the recombination rate get higher as you're going further away from resonance?
Yeah, this is interesting question. Let me find the black spot here. Dark. Yes. Because
if you just vary A, then it's going up less rapidly.
No. I don't think that. I mean, the explanation is, the problem is that the bound already in two-body physics. If I consider A as if I consider A to be scattering length, then this is wrong. Then alpha rec equals proportional to r to the 4 is wrong. But if I put here the size of the bound state, which is different, because let me, okay, so if I write scattering amplitude like this, 1 over a plus r star e plus I square root of e, and if I solve this, the poles of this, the poles of the scattering amplitude give me binding energy, and if I solve the quadratic equation, then I see that this will be areas, this will be binding energy. This is E equals areas. Then I see that I have this kind of behavior. This is bound. Here it behaves like 1 over a squared minus 1 over. And this is the case of small detuning. And here, binding energy is more or less like resonant energy, which is 1 over r star a. So the size of my bound state is not a, so it is square root of r star a. And if I plug this expression to here, then I will see that and remember that in the regime of intermediate detunings, R star is much larger than A, then I see that indeed alpha recombination should be higher. But of course, you know, I have to write it like this. I have to keep 3 here, and then put the size of the bound state. And this can be on the, you know, which portion of this A I should use, you know, it can be calculated on the. Actually, yes, it's quite interesting that, for example, this atom molecule conversion experiment with sodium, the binding energy is not 1 over A squared. It's more or less the resonant energy already. 1 over R star A, and the size is larger. I have some conclusions actually.
Yes.
But I'm
probably need some air before the next talk.
Oh, yeah.
Oops.
It's coming soon. Oh,
yes.
Global warming. Global warming.
Yes. So there are two conclusions. Narrow Fischbach resonances have some features of long-range potentials, at least, well, how we understand it, like with this R star and with this strong momentum dependence of the scattering amplitude. And we are able to calculate low-energy three-boson observables for a narrow resonance without any three-body parameters coming from the short-range physics. This, I recently put it on CondMath. So, 4 pages paper. Yes.
So we appreciate having had the longer version.
Yes, thank you very much.
Oh, thank you very much.